Esto.
Enthusiastic. Enthusiastic.
Yeah, very enthusiastic. Very, okay. Yeah, I've spoken it also. It's like a... It's like over-exaggerated, you know, like melodramatic. You know. Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastau Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, page 24, Sutra 149. Jyotir Upa Krama Tutata Yadi Yata AK. Jyoti, light. Upakrama, beginning with. Tu, indeed. Tata, in that way. He, indeed. Adhyate. Is this like a technical thing?
Adhyate, read.
Means it like you have an iPhone and this is an iRead or something. So it says I read means I read it that way or understand it that way.
It's simply read.
Read, no I.
No.
Okay, so we're taking out of the 21st century. Okay, AK some. Brahman is certainly the cause of Aja by context. As well. Some branches of the Vedas have texts stating that Brahman produces Prakriti. Sutra Prakashika. Here, Jyoti, meaning light, actually means Brahman, as proved in Sutra 1.1.24, is the cause of Aja, and Aja means a Shakti of Brahman because of particular reasons. This is proved by the Sutrakar citing several scriptural references. Sri Govinda Basya. Siddhanta. The word tu indicates certainty of the conclusion. The word jyotihi means Brahman, for it is well known in statements like taddeva jyotisham jyotihi. The Lord is the light among all lights. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.16. Upakrama means cause. Brahman is the cause of the unborn female. The literal meaning, unborn, meaning without a cause or independent, cannot be taken. As in the case of Chamasa, because of the special understanding derived from the context. Arvag bilas Chamasa urdva budna. The cup has its mouth downwards and its bottom upwards. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. By this description, the cup must actually be a head. Right? So you have to take it in the context. You don't take it literally. Because otherwise, if they're going to try to take it literally, then they have to take this literally. Right? And so if they take this literally, that means then there's a cup. You know, people are walking around with a cup instead of a head or something. You know. So that's the difficulty. So here is that the unborn then is the... how do you say? without a cause or independent, you can't take that. Mm-hmm. So in other words, unborn can mean that. But we see in the way of the Lord, that's what his position is. Mm-hmm. He is unborn. He is without a cause. He is independent. But what is coming from him, though it is also unborn because it is coming from him, mm-hmm. right, is part of him. So in that way, it is unborn, but it's dependent upon him, and it's with the cause, meaning him. Yes. Right? So in other words, Prakriti manifesting in the way it does, that's because of him. Yes. It's not independent. Yes. Does that make sense? That's an important thing to know. So it's like the nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. That means that of all the eternals, there's the supreme eternal. So all the other eternals, they're dependent upon this eternal. Does that make sense? So they're still unborn because the Lord being unborn, therefore his parts and parcels are unborn. But the point is the transformations that they go through, that is caused by him. He is independent in his desire, the others are not. Yes.
What do the Purvapakshis say?
What do the Purvapakshis say? Well, that was the previous one. They're just trying to say that it's Prakriti. Yeah, but then that's already been adjusted, and now here giving further. So either sometimes we see that many verses will go to prove different aspects because they have many different ways of approaching it, or we adjust what's the misunderstanding and what they're saying, and then give other reasons also. So you've already corrected the understanding with one presentation, and that was enough to correct it. And then there's more to also just to confirm it. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like, yeah, you know, you prove your point, and then you can, with a few more things, prove it. Because by that, then you start to see things in the proper context. Because otherwise, you just defeat the philosophy, then they go back, think about it again, and try to come back with some other idea. But here you're trying to adjust it so that there's the proper understanding is there.
So,
yeah. Yes.
So when we say that Prakriti is dependent on Krishna,
yes,
we can say the same for the jiva, for the
yes.
time,
yes.
for all energies.
Means all energies. So that's the point, because technically all of them are unborn.
Yes.
But because in context we talk about the soul being born, mm-hmm. you know, or the material nature manifesting. Therefore, there's that confusion.
Yes.
Right? Because you're dealing with two perspectives. You're dealing with the material perspective, you're dealing with the spiritual perspective. So from the material perspective, something comes into existence and it disappears. Right? And the jiva, then they get newer and newer bodies, always these things are changing. So in that way it appears that that's working in that function. Does that make sense? But the actuality is that's not what's happening. Because the soul's eternal, the conditioning, that's what's changing. Because of their material desire, therefore they're getting a material body, that's there. But the soul themselves doesn't change. Right? And the material nature, it's transforming, but it's transforming according to the eternal laws and the desire of the Lord. And it's made up of the original energies. And so, therefore, it also has that position of eternality. Does that make sense? So on the spiritual platform, you can see everything as Brahman, right? Because you see it's all eternal and it's all coming from the Lord. But as far as the transformations on the platform of where it can be seen, I say, the reality is the Parinamavad, right?
Yeah.
Is that is what's transforming. But the difficulty is the jiva being an illusion, which is, what's illusion? The V?
Vivarta.
Is they see it from that. So it's not that the material energy is illusion, their perspective of it is illusion, right? So that there's an illusion, that's there. But at the same time, it's real. So that's the difficulties. We're dealing with illusion and reality. And so it has to be presented in a way that we, from our position, conditioning, can appreciate it.
Yes.
So that's where it becomes confusing, because we talk about it both as material and as spiritual. Does that make sense? So that's what's being dealt with here in this pada, right? And I think, no, this pada or the last pada? It means that those definitions that are used in a multiplicity of ways, like the jiva is called unborn, but at the same time, he's born. So these things, it can be used in many ways. The first chapters were about, it's pretty direct how it is. It's always said in that way. They're not used in a different way, but there's a misinterpretation of that. Right? So having dealt with those, which are straightforward, then now the Vyasadeva is dealing with those words that are used in many different ways according to the context. And so you can come up with opposite meanings with the same word. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, someone's referring to something that's nice that they like, and they say, that's really bad. Right? So that's the kind of words we're dealing with here. Because bad can mean it's good, bad can mean it's bad. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the kind of things, words that have... Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes it sounds that whoever takes the text and they want to achieve, you know, a certain objective.
Yes.
They interpret it and then they get their own objective. It's not.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with the reality or the supreme absolute truth.
No, because that's why they're taking. Means that when you interpret, you take a indirect meaning of the words. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, two ladies meet and they, you know, haven't seen each other for a while, and the relationship's a bit strained, you know, at least before. And they meet, and then one says to the other, "Oh, hi, how are you today?" You know, and then the other one goes back and says, "Wow, you know, she came on and she was really heavy and she was this and that," because you're reading into it what has been said. But the words, they mean one thing. You understand? But how you interpret it, you can come up with, you know, 20 different interpretations. Or at least here, 6 different interpretations. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what's happening, is that they're taking something that's meant in one way and using it, like you said, for their own purpose. They want to establish the, you know, the logic is the method, or atomic theory is the method, or how you say, analysis is the method, yoga is the method, karma is the method, or, you know, how you say, renunciation and getting, you know, stopping the whole cycle and merging in Brahman, like that is the method. So because of that, then they'll interpret. That's the difficulty. So that's why Vedanta Sutra has been written to correct these misinterpretations of these 6 schools. So Vedanta Sutra is actually a study in how to properly understand the Vedanta philosophy and how to defeat all other non-Vaishnava interpretations of Vedanta. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because Vedanta, being its nature, it actually, it being the highest of the philosophies, it actually, how you say, includes all the others, and any misunderstanding in the others has to be seen correctly in the light of Vedanta. So in other words, Vedanta is the philosophy, and these others are portions of that. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, let's say you have a kitchen helper. He's called a kitchen assistant. But now if he claims he's a cook, you know, that's a problem. But he's a kitchen assistant, that they try to create the whole thing out of that. You know, it's just like someone saying, "Oh yes, it was a very nice meal and all that. Yeah, you know, I cut everything, I arranged everything. It wasn't for me, it wouldn't have happened." You know, but then the guy who does the marketing, and that's all he does. No, but if he didn't get it, then it wouldn't happen, you know? Like that. The treasurer will say, "Well, if I didn't give the money, it wouldn't have happened, you know?" You know, so just like that, that's what these other philosophies are. So then here it's just very thoroughly, because you're dealing with, you know, the intellectual or scholarly platform. And it's all based on words. Everything's, the crux of things are all on a word. You know, you have one word or a few words, key words, and from that you produce your whole philosophy. So that way, then those words are interpreted always that way. And then because of that, then you get their philosophy. That's the meaning of hermeneutics. Hermeneutics means how you interpret it. Right? So, therefore, when they see a word like this, they always interpret it in a particular way. That gives their philosophy. Does that make sense? So in these others, then it's generally very straightforward like that. But then the problem is it can't accommodate the actual position of the philosophy. Well, Vedanta, because it is accommodating this whole thing of Achintabheda Veda Tattva, then therefore that's why it appears to be more complex. And therefore words have you know, multiple meanings depending upon the context. Right? While these others, then they won't do it that way. They'll always just have a few words, and that's what they always work on. You know, like let's say when the Maya bodies are talking to the common person, they'll always use Nishkam Karma Yoga, you know, even Bhakti, but they'll always use these terms. Because that way then, if common people catch it, yes, you're conditioned. You think you exist, so therefore then you work in that field. Does that make sense? But then in their own mind, in their level, because they're so advanced, then they don't work on that level. They have their own thing, but they don't talk about that to the common person. You know, it's just the standard, you know, academic view that, you know, or professional view that only you can understand, the common person can understand. Does that make sense? You know, so all that's being corrected by the Vedanta, because Vedanta is such that anyone can understand. Right? You see, the gopis in their prayers, they're discussing, you know, the highest levels of Vedanta philosophy. So the point is it's the natural philosophy for the soul. These others, you actually have to be conditioned to appreciate them. Like that. They're not meant for actual spiritual people. So,
we find that the Sankhya philosophers would be refuted, you know, in the earlier path. And here we find that in path 4, the entire path is dedicated to the Sankhyas. So why is it that...
Because there's different... As we said, it depends upon the various aspects of their philosophy. So you're just dealing with just like the first two padas dealt so much with Jaimini, and also with Shankara Vedanta. You know what I'm saying? So it's just different areas then will deal with different things. So you may have defeated certain aspects, but then there's other aspects. Does that make sense? The key main things are there, but the point is people always have some little side things. You know? They don't surrender very easily. They just have to keep at it. And also is that when you're dealing with one philosophy, it also covers everything below it. Does that make sense? Because Shankya then can defeat Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Does that make sense? You know, just like Yoga then can defeat that. Karma Mimamsa can defeat those other four. Like that. So depending upon what it is that may be specifically theirs, but then there's something that's there that's with the others. But then by doing it through their philosophy, you naturally correct the other ones.
Because it so happens that after defeating the Sankhyas, we still deal with the Vaisheshiks. You know? So actually, we should not deal, because already Sankhyas didn't be defeated implies, you know, Vaisheshikas also.
That's there, but the same time as there may be a specific point that the Vaisheshikas pull out, so you just want to make it very clear.
Okay,
because what people may or may not follow the philosophy down like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the Vedanta Sutra is a study in the six schools and what's the proper understanding. Yeah. Okay. In the first and fourth chapters of the Svetasvatara Upanishad, there's a mention of Aja with the word Shakti. Thus, Aja means a Shakti of Brahman. Te Dhyana Yogan Nugata Apasyan Devatma Shaktim Swa Guner Ni Budham. Devoted to meditation, they saw the Shakti of the Lord hidden in its gunas. Svetasvatara Upanishad 1.3. Like, because the Shakti of the Lord is hidden in the gunas. You can see the gunas acting. So that means you can see the Shakti itself. Is this working through that? You know, in other words, this is just showing how the, you know, how it works. How it means this style of presentation. Ya Eka Varno Bahuda Shakti Yogata. The one became many by means of Shakti. Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.1. Therefore, Aja does not mean independent prakriti of the Shankya philosophers. Right? Because they're saying that Shakti works on its own. But here we see Shakti is working under the direction of the Lord.
How can we see this promise?
Sorry?
The one became many by means of Shakti. How can we see that from this?
Because the one is Brahman, is the Lord. And then the many, he means all the variety that you see in everything that's there, that is done through the Shakti. That means that the manifestation of the many by the Shakti is coming because of the one. Like that. That's the... Does that make sense?
It's a subject and instrument. Subject and instrument.
Subject and instrument. So in other words, yeah. Yeah. Yes.
In the Vaishnava theology, can we say that the Lord, he activates the Shakti and then they're working on their own because he remains aloof?
You can, yes, you can say, but the point is how they're working will always be in the context of what is approved of by the Lord. So in other words, Paramatma's there, so everything has to be approved of by him. But if it's something that's pretty standard, you know, you're in the kitchen, you drop a tomato, and the tomato hits the floor and makes a mess, that he doesn't have to every time say, you know, that it has to make a mess. It's already been established. So she knows what to do. Like that. But it's still with the potency of the Lord and under the direction of the Lord. Does that make sense? But she's carrying it on. She knows what to do. So the point being is that they're going to emphasize that independent nature, while we're going to emphasize the dependent nature. Because the only reason it's there is because of Krishna's desire. It's not for his will, it's not going to happen. That's the main thing. So the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis are only in support of the Icha Shakti. So Krishna's created the material world to engage the living entities in such a way that then they're inclined to take up their natural position in service. Does that make sense? Yeah, because if you, in other words, if you do all the activities in the material platform that are favorable for bhakti, even if you're not doing bhakti, you always get a good result. And if you do those activities that are not favorable to bhakti, you always get a bad result. And so then one will be inclined towards the pious. But even you follow the pious, get all the good results, you're still not satisfied. So then that's going to bring up the real question. So what is the real purpose? Then it comes up that the real purpose is serving the Lord. So that makes sense? So then living entities then can start to see things in the proper way. Because otherwise, as long as you're just acting within the realm of karma, then there'll always be, you know, happiness and distress there. As soon as you work within the pious karma, you know, you give up vikarma and take up karma, then the results are better. And so one may consider that one's happy, but if one looks at it properly, one will see one's not actually. So after a long time, then people start to understand what's going on. Because I'm doing everything right, I'm getting everything. So the point is that someone performs pious activity because of the benefit they'll get from it. Right? So you're religious, you expect good results. And so one is getting good results and one is, you know, in the beginning happy. But with time, one starts to notice that even the good results don't actually give happiness. So that brings up the question of what actually brings happiness. So that's devotional service. So performing the religious activity to please Krishna actually gives satisfaction. But we're thinking, no, it's performance of the religious activity and the results you get from the religious activity that makes us happy. When it's not, it's Krishna's satisfaction makes us happy. Because the results of religion can't make the soul happy, because the results of religion will be on the material platform. And so they can't satisfy the soul.
So, it's interesting that the eternal question was asked in the beginning, you know, Atata Brahma Jigyasa, still people can get it together.
No.
So it's the, you know.
Well, that's why then there's 555, four sutras to explain that Atata Brahma Jigyasa. Like that. It's because that's the point, is we tend to not. Because we're looking at it from the secondary position. That the secondary, if the secondary is good, then everything's good. And if the secondary is not good, then there's a problem. Right? That's our tendency. But the point is that unless it's primary, it's not good. So primary is expressed through a secondary. So the only value of secondary is its ability to express primary. But if it's not expressing primary, what's the point? There is no point. So the idea is that they're just functioning as secondary, and that will actually produce a result that will satisfy the soul, is that's an illusion. That's Maya. Right? But that all this is Krishna's energy, and therefore we use this energy to express that primary element of affection for the Lord, then it has a value. Right? So in the spiritual world, those living entities that always deal on that platform, the spiritual, in devotion, they're there. So you don't have the problem there. But those who aren't willing to do that, they're here. But still being an energy of the Lord, it still can be used in His service. So then there's no contradiction there. It's just an inferior, you know, thing. So since it's about the Lord, then at least the spiritual consciousness is there, though we're dealing with inferior ingredients. And so, therefore, we're trying to please the Lord with, you know, the best we can do with the ingredients we have. Right? So since we're endeavoring to improve the quality of ingredients for ourselves, why we wouldn't endeavor to improve the quality of ingredients for Krishna? Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like for us, we eat all fancy, and for Krishna, it's patram pushpam phalam toyam. Right? You know, Prabhupada mentions that nectar devotion. We should not do that. You know, so it's about us, we have to make that endeavor. Right? But for Krishna, oh, it's just devotion. We don't need to make any endeavor. But as you see, is that Rukmini points out, is that endeavor is the main thing. And then the results of endeavor is that, you know, then Rukmini is involved. You know, Rukmini is connected to Krishna. And so that's the whole point, is that when we do things in devotion, then Lakshmi is connected to Narayan. That's the philosophy. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then, to the best of our ability, we are trying to get nice things for Krishna. That means nice for Krishna means it's Krishna conscious, it's favorable to Krishna, and it's free from karma and jnana. So therefore, what things Krishna would like, how he would like them, that's what we're trying to arrange. And then the more we identify as a servant of Krishna, then the more that this isn't separate from our own need. And the more we have, we identify with our upadis, then the more what we need and the endeavor for things for Krishna are separate. You know, I mean, well, of course, to simplify it, say that all what we're doing for ourselves is for Krishna. Like that. But that, you know, how you say, you know, 1.4 billion people will say that to you. So it's not a new thing. So that's the thing, is people in the West are thinking this is new, that, you know, that they're, it's just standard Hindu stuff that every Hindu's been saying since time immemorial. Like that. And that's the worst part, is they're identifying that we're not Hindus. But they are, totally. You know, just less pious, that's all. You know what I'm saying? It's just, that's the point. The modes of nature are there. They're going to get you one way or another. You go this way, then they'll get you that way. You go that way, then they'll still. There's no problem, right? There's one of us, and there's three modes. You know, so. is that okay? Yes.
And they say that Prakriti is Aja, but actually we find that it says over here that the Shakti of the Lord is involved. So Shakti is basically subtle and Prakriti is gross. So they don't go to the subtle point and they just remain.
The Prakriti and Prakriti and
Shakti.
But why are you saying Prakriti is gross?
Because now
Gunas and Prakriti is Shakti. It's like saying the car is gross, but the automobile is not. You understand? It's just the context and how the word's used, and that brings it out. Because they're saying it's pradhan. So pradhan, subtle.
Yeah, pradhan is subtle.
Yeah, so that the whole argument's about pradhan. So. Point is, this doesn't matter. The manifestation of it here, then we call it gross, but the point is this is all made out of, you know, let's say the pillar is made out of earth atoms. But all those are coming from pradhan. It's not that it's made of something different from pradhan. Just in pradhan, it's homogeneous.
Yeah.
While here it's separated, so therefore you can get a pillar.
Now, if pradhan is subtle, and here it says even shakti is subtle, so does it mean that the pradhan that they speak of and the shakti that we speak of is the same?
We're all speaking of the same thing. They just don't see it in its proper form. It's just like, is the soul that the materialist is talking about and the soul that the spiritualist is talking about the same soul?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just the perception is different. One understands that the soul is eternal and the servant of the Lord, while the other one sees that, you know, they're the controller and enjoyer, and there's a good chance they're quite temporary. So we're talking about the same thing. That's why there's a basis for discussion, because we're talking about the same thing. It's just that their interpretation, the hermeneutics, are such that it won't give a viable understanding that will allow the living entity to elevate themselves to the transcendental position. Does that make sense? It'll do something. We see as all these six schools, they can get some material benefit from it. You know, and some variety of spiritual kind of, spiritual-esque kind of benefits. But they can't actually get the transcendental benefits that devotional service will give. Does that make sense? Yeah. Another proof is shown. The word he indicates a reason. Because some schools of the Vedas teach in this way, they say that Prakriti arises from the Lord. Tasmat etad brahmanama rupam annam chajayate. From the Lord, this Brahma, Prakriti, name, form, and food were born. Mundaka Upanishad 119. In this word, Brahma means pradhan, made of three gunas, as in the Smriti statement, Mama Yonir Mahad Brahma, the great Shakti is my womb. Bhagavad Gita 14.3. Mama Yonir Mahad Brahma, the total material substance called Brahman, is the source of birth. So everything's coming from Krishna. It's still, he's doing it, but through his energies. Otherwise, how do you do something except through you? Like, when you cook, how do you cook? Right? Through the kitchen utensils and everything like that. But you're doing the cooking. But if someone is not understanding this, they'll say the pots are doing the cooking. So that's what's happening here. They're saying Pradhan is doing everything, so they can't see the cook. But that's the problem. Yes.
He also more difficult to see the Lord if we deal specifically with the secondary creation.
Yes.
Because he's not as much as involved. It seems like it happens on its own.
Yes, but the point is that he is in every atom, between every atom, as Paramatma. You have then he's all pervading as Brahman. It's the qualities of Brahman that are drawn on from the material nature to manifest in things. You know, like the pillar has strength, or the floor has that support. You know, different qualities are there, and so by understanding this, then from that, since we know that all the physical comes from the metaphysical is coming from the Lord, and the metaphysical defines manifests the laws of the Lord, how the material energy will work. That if you see in that way, then you're always seeing the Lord through these external energy. Like that, you're not seeing differently. It's, remember, what was it? I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was the ninth canto. Prabhupada was talking about that the spiritualist is in the material. It's not exactly in the material world because their perception is different. Do you remember that point?
Yes, we saw that point.
Yes, so. He was making the point that because the spiritualist sees the material energy all connected to Krishna. I think that's one of the Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. He sees everything connected to the Lord. Therefore, he's technically not within the material world, though he's physically here. But as far as consciousness, he's not within the realm of Vivarta, of illusion. Right? So he's actually dealing with everything in this reality and its connection with the Lord. So then it takes on a whole different kind of position. So for the spiritualist, he sees the Lord everywhere in everything. So anything that you appreciate, it's because it's the Lord. Does that make sense? So let's say, okay, we appreciate the blanket because of its warmth, you know, or the insulation. But that warmth or the insulation, that's Krishna. It's his potency. And so, but it's coming from him. The potency comes from him. So then for the devotee, they take it all the way back to him. Then for all the others, they only take it back to the energy itself. So they may see the metaphysical, but they'll see the physical, the subtle, the metaphysical, and then back to Pradhan. But they won't see beyond that. So all materialists, all of them, karmis, jnanis, they can't see past the Mahatattva. So the closest they get is understanding that Brahman has that unlimited aspect and unchanging aspect. Because right? If it wasn't, then how would there be, you know, how would things function? But at the same time, they can't see what's beyond. Everything is Brahman, and Brahman is pervading everything, but they can't see the Brahman past, the original, the origin of Brahman, the support of Brahman. That they can't see. So they're limited by their conditioning to the Mahatattva. That's the farthest they can get. Does that make sense? So if Mahatattva is your basis of perception, therefore Pradhan is subtler than that. You know, it's the unborn, it's what's before. Like that. But you know what I'm saying? But the aspect is what's manifest of the material of Pradhan, that is unborn in that it's the Lord. He's the formal cause. So all the 8,400,000 species, the 14 planetary systems, all the different situations in those planetary systems, you know, the mountains, the valleys, the plains, the, you know, by the seaside, you know, all the different kinds of places that are there. All this is coming from the Lord. It's eternal. So therefore, even though it's manifested, it's unborn. But at the same time, we can say it's born because it's manifested. It wasn't manifest before, then he manifested. Then he winds it up, then he manifests it again. But the principles on which it works are eternal. It's always there. You know, it's like, you know, you have whatever it is, the 8,400,000, they're the same in this universe. They're in every other universe. And every time he breathes out, it's the same 8,400,000. It doesn't change. So that's the whole. That's why we say chewing the chewed. You know, it's just the same thing over and over and over again. It doesn't change. So therefore, it's also unborn. But they're misinterpreting that it's unborn as that's the cause of it. It's the stable and steady thing. So actually, the Brahman is that. You know. But they're misunderstanding. So they don't understand is that Brahman is beyond Prakriti.
Okay.
Because Prakriti is just an energy. There's an energy, there has to be an energetic. So that's just logic.
Maharaj, there's a distinction made between Srishti and Prakash, or creation and manifestation. Creation is something that doesn't previously exist and then it's brought into being, and Prakash and manifestation, it already exists, it's just not manifested and then it's brought out and then can be.
Yeah, so the primary creation would be that, what do you say, Prakash?
Prakash.
And so then the secondary creation is based on that, so that's why you can see that primary from the secondary, and then the primary is coming from the Lord, so that way you can see that connection. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So does that make sense? So that's the process we're using here. That's what we're being trained in. It's not that knowledge and detachment themselves give bhakti. They're just tools to use in bhakti. They're qualities that are useful. So if they're used in devotional service, then they're quite good. But it's not that they themselves are technically important. You know what I'm saying? Yudhishthira Maharaj is king of the world, right? Literally. You know, not he's on a boat and saying that or something, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he actually is. So there's no need of him to renounce to become devotional. Does that make sense? Well, like you see then the Avantipur Brahmana, he is renounced. But it's not because he's renounced, that's why he's a devotee. That's just a position he's using in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So knowledge is the same way. So we're learning the knowledge associating with this, because by this it may awaken our interest in Krishna, awaken in devotional service. So that's the advantage. You know, like yesterday's discussion, how to awaken this. So it's by associating with the Shastras and associating with the comments of the Acharyas and the devotees and all that based on this. It's all about Krishna. So then by hearing this constantly, then it awakens that desire. Does that make sense? And then these other aspects that are more specific, that can be of value at that point. Otherwise, it's just doing the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Reading, you read Krishna book, you read Bhagavad Gita, they're both doing the same thing. Does that make sense? Purifying the heart, reminding of Krishna and everything like that. Now, specifics, that we may be able to get from the Bhagavatam, but we can only get that if we're on that platform to get it. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, people can become attracted to someone based on a moment. Right? So that's all it takes. The gopis, or Rukmini, she's just heard. And she's absorbed. You know, the gopis saw, you know, is that story, Radharani thinks that she's become attracted to three different boys. Right? Because, so that's the point, it's just one thing is all it requires. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean that you're reading, the Panchajaya for years and years, and therefore then it makes it happen. No, it just takes a moment. So when the heart is purified, when that devotion is there, then that moment then has that effect. But by associating, then, that point is by hearing and chanting about Krishna, that's where moments will happen. Does that make sense? But it's not that because I'm reading, that will make it happen. Because knowledge doesn't make devotion. Devotion is independent. But because it's knowledge about Krishna, being in contact with Krishna, that we're studying, hearing and chanting about Krishna, that's the devotion. Does that make sense? That's why the jnani, though he's the best of the neophytes, is still considered a neophyte. Because it's about knowledge about the Lord, rather than devotion to the Lord. Right? It means there is devotion, of course, because they're devotees. But it's about knowledge about the Lord as opposed to just hearing and chanting. So does that make sense? So there was, we can sit here and study, like we're doing, the Bhagavatam, because of knowledge. And it's not a problem because it's connected to Krishna. We have an interest in knowledge or an attachment to knowledge, so therefore hearing and chanting about, this knowledge about Krishna, then we're absorbed in Krishna and his pastimes. So it's good. But then we're endeavoring for knowledge. Right? And so there's a difficulty there. Right? But if we look at it from the other side, is that we're hearing and chanting about Krishna, and this is another way that Prabhupada's given for us to always be absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna and the association of devotees, then the devotional service is going on, and then the knowledge and all these other things come along with it. So you don't have to separately endeavor for the knowledge. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of the perspective of how you approach it. Yes.
I was thinking also that, many people talk about smaran.
Right.
So then, for me, the best smaran is here in Srimad Bhagavatam,
because
that reminds me of Krishna constantly.
Yes, that's the whole point. Because unless you've heard, what do you remember? Right? Because it's not that, because it's, as we said, it only takes a moment. So you walk into the temple, see the deities. It only takes that moment. But, we have plenty of those moments and we may not be remembering. You know what I'm saying? But, something we saw on YouTube, then it's very vivid and we can remember all the details. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of what is attractive and all that. So by always hearing and chanting about Krishna, that's the best way to be remembering about Krishna. And that's the best opportunity that it will come up. So that by hearing, then we'll remember. But this just will sit down and meditate on that. Yoga does that. But for us, it's a natural thing. The gopis, are they sitting down in asanas and then meditating on Krishna? No, they're cleaning the house, making cow dung patties, doing all that kind of stuff and remembering Krishna. Because they've heard, they've seen, they've engaged. And we see is that Krishna makes the point. He's always, Rukmini is always thinking of him and he's always thinking of her. They haven't seen each other. They've only heard. So, so the process you're, recommending here is the process that Acharya said. Because you hear, you chant, you'll remember. So that those three go together. Then the other processes, then those are different ways that you can engage yourself, like that. So those three are the main. And then the other, is it, those are three, the other four, it's nine processes. So there's another three. Then those ones are various activities you can be engaged in. And then the last three are the different kind of moods and that, how you're applying these. In the mood of servant, mood of friend, or mood of that full surrender. So these are the different. Because if you hear chant, hear and chant, then you'll remember and all the other things will happen. Then you'll naturally, you know, identify as a servant, naturally have that friendship towards the Lord, that surrender towards the Lord. And then you'll appreciate the Lord's devotees, anything connected to the Lord himself, and one will be, thinking about the Lord and offering prayers to the Lord. Everything will happen if you hear and chant. Right? If you hear chant, remember, then all the other things happen. Yeah. So then you first hear. Having heard, you chant. Having heard and chanted, you remember. Right? And so that's enough in itself. It's complete in itself. But the others are also there and very nice to be involved with. So,
the other school, they don't have the system.
No, the other schools don't have. That's why I said the other schools are actually very difficult. Because you're trying to get something done with simply the material facilities. Without the Lord's blessing. Means anything you're getting is coming from the Lord's blessings. But it's coming indirectly in that you're following the rule nicely. You get the result. You don't follow the rule, you do not get the result. To that degree, you do the yajna, you do it perfectly, you get a perfect result. You don't do it perfectly, you don't get any result. So that's the whole thing. The material platform, it depends upon your material qualification. So that's why in bhakti, it's not worried about the material qualification. You, since you're engaging in Krishna's service and you want the best for Krishna, therefore, according to your ability, then you'll cultivate that knowledge and skills to be able to apply that to get the nice results for Krishna. So bhakti automatically includes that. But generally people think that, oh, it's just about bhakti, that's not about knowledge and skills, so I have to be practical, I have to do this. Right? But we see as the modern thing is the emphasis is all on knowledge and skills. But not on the devotion in which it's done. It says, of course it's in devotion. So let's talk about the knowledge and skills as if that's the substance. You know what I'm saying? Rather than actually, you know, the attitude in which it's done.
The secondary instead of primary.
Yeah. It's just like, let's say we're cooking. So, yes, you have to know the technique, but you have to know the mentality. You know, and so if someone's doing something wrong, what does that indicate? Is simply a lack of knowledge and technique, or it's a lack of proper consciousness? Right. So that's the whole point: is that you don't have to. The knowledge and skill goes along with teaching the proper attitude and proper, you know, consciousness. Because unless you're conscious, then how do you? You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say you're cooking. Okay, and you have some, and the what you're cooking has to sit for a few minutes on the fire. You've stirred it, now it'll sit for some more time. Mm-hmm. Now you have other things you can do. You can do those things. You can even walk out of the kitchen. But the thing is you have to be conscious of the preparation. Like that. So while you're going out and getting something, this and that, you have to be thinking of the preparation. And then you know when it's time that you have to be back and stir. Those people who are not conscious, they come late, things, you know, burn, dry, this, that, you know, whatever. It goes wrong. So it's not technique. It's consciousness. You know, that's the whole point. So if you have the consciousness, knowledge and technique go along with it. So because it's not emphasized, people think it's not happening. Remember whenever I talk about, you know, it's like how you say for us, we'll take it that, you know, English, math, you know, general knowledge, these are things, of course you learn those things. But the focus is on the character development and on the Shastric knowledge. But every time I would explain the curriculum, guaranteed whoever I was talking to, they'd always ask, well, what about English and all these? I already mentioned it. But because I'm not emphasizing it, they think that it's not happening, it's not important. Right? While if you generally go to other schools, they're only talking about their English and their curriculum, this and that. And yes, of course, we do some shlokas, this, that, and some philosophy, and then they get into this other thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of, it's, if you're not emphasizing knowledge and skills, then it's not happening. Well, if you're emphasizing devotion, automatically it's there. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, what was it? You take, as I mentioned before, it's like you had those devotees, you had all these different devotees. They were there in America, became, then they went to all these other places, started temples, started yatras, like that. Which management book explains how to do that? There isn't one. And all those who are studied well in those management books, are any of them opening a temple or a yatra? Not one of them. Does that make sense? That's the problem. So, it's thought the knowledge and skills is the substance. No, it's the consciousness of the substance. And so if you have the consciousness, you're able to do things that are far beyond the standard knowledge and skills. Because if you're working with Krishna, then what's the problem? Right? It used to be a standard saying, you know, how you saying people were going or doing something, then it was, how you say, you had the, you know, Godspeed or, you know, like that, or Vaya Candias, or, you know, these different things that is, you know, by the Lord's grace, it will work. You know, may you be successful by the Lord's grace. They don't say that anymore. Like that. I looked up, was it the Vaya Candias, and it's considered archaic. People don't use it anymore. Like that. I guess if you had a trunk full of doubloons, then you would use it. But since then, since they sank, you know, the things, then no. So it's the whole point is that it's not seen that it's by God's grace it's happening. It's thinking, no, by my endeavor it's happening. But that's a problem, you know. So it's being thought is because I have good, you know, I have all the best equipments in my kitchen, therefore I'm a good cook.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you go to a 5-day management seminar and people come out actually thinking they're managers. You know, I mean, it's like what illusion is that? Yeah, Vivarta. You know, it's just, you know, it's a standard thing, right? You know, all the newspapers and all that, when they have their ads and everything for what do you call it? Job opportunities. You know, then they always mention that, you know, we're looking for, you know, first class solid managers who've, you know, minimum, you know, have done that 5-day management seminar. Right? That's what they all say, right? Isn't it? Probably none of them say that. So if somehow or another you can go to learn, become a manager in 5 days, then why is that more important than, you know, like here, you know, you study this level of Bhagavatam and that, then that's 9 years. So 5 days, 9 years, you know, kind of, let's, yeah. So that's the difficulty, is that we're not seeing beyond. That's all these different schools, they don't see beyond the material energy. They think that's the all in all. They can't see it's the Lord. And if you have the Lord, since this is His energy, you have that automatically. You have the Lord, you have His energy. Does that make sense? Yes, no. Okay.
Whereas, is it misgivings that cause that lack of being able to see?
Yes, misgivings. Also, means if it's light, means that you don't know, that just must be, that just may be, you know, just a lack of knowledge like this. But if having come across it and one doubts it or one is not inclined towards it, that's a misgiving. But if one just doesn't know, that's just ignorance. And then having been enlightened in it, then you function that way. So it's just a matter of, you know, it's like doubts are, you know, you can deal with them easily. Misgivings take a little longer. And, you know, so it's the, that's why again and again the same things are being discussed. on more and more deeper levels, but it's the same point. Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26, 3 through 4. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Soul, and He has no beginning. He is transcendental to the material modes of nature and beyond the existence of this material world. He is perceivable everywhere because He is self-effulgent, and by His self-effulgent luster, the entire creation is maintained. It means through His Brahman. Right? As His pastime, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the greatest of the great, accepted the subtle material energy, which is invested with three material modes of nature and which is related with Vishnu. Right? So we see is that Vishayavakya, the main verse that's being discussed, Upanishadic verses under question or discussion, we see here the Bhagavatam then very nicely brings that out, but so nicely about the person and his position. That's the difference. The Upanishadic language doesn't make it as clear. It means you know the words, you know what it's talking about. But as we said, it doesn't have the sweetness of the Bhagavatam. So we see is that whatever is being discussed here in Vedanta Sutra, it's discussed in Bhagavatam, but with more, it's the natural commentary. Like that. And then you have the commentaries. Yes. Right? Just the Bhagavatam verses itself is the natural commentaries on Vedanta. As you can see, the verse itself sums up all these two verses so nicely. Like that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can we say that it's also because Srila Prabhupada, when he translates Bhagavatam, it sounds so good. There's even commentaries of the previous acharyas that it's not that they don't sound that good, but they're just not that clear for us. Can we say that?
Because yes.
They're much more technical. Yes.
But that's why then, yes, it's technical because you're dealing, like Prabhu said before, that made the point, is that it's a grammatical consideration. You know, of which of the six main nouns that you're working with. So that was, where was it?
Subject and instrument.
Subject and instrument there. Mm-hmm. You know, so because you're talking about the Lord and then the living entities and in their position, and here specifically the material energy as the instrument, like this.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So then you're talking, so all these grammatical things, if that's the natural position that you're functioning at, then it makes sense, but it still will never have the sweetness of Bhagavatam. That's why all these great sages and everyone, when they heard Bhagavatam's going to be spoken, they came from all over the universe to hear. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Well, discussions on, I think, Tapaloka, you had, major people there, in the prayers of the personified Vedas, but you don't hear everyone coming from all over the universe to hear it. But when it's being discussed as Bhagavatam, then people are coming. So yes. That's why then Rupa Goswami says you have to approach the previous acharyas through your acharya. So when you understand here, Prabhupada's written this, then the acharyas have given commentaries, and you see a connection with this, then it expands your understanding of what Prabhupada said. Because we'll just think, oh, it's just some simple point here. But like we've read this verse, but we have not understood its connection with this technical points of Vedanta Sutra. And how this verse defeats the Shankyites, the atheistic Shankyites. So then this comes out from these Acharya's commentaries. So we actually appreciate then what the founder has given us. So when Prabhupada says everything's in the books, it literally means that. And if there's something where you can get advantage by detail, then Prabhupada's books mention it. All the books that we're studying, Prabhupada's mentioned those books. That's the point. We're sticking to the ones that he specifically mentioned. He mentioned Brahma Samhita. It means out of all the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's works, he said, you just read Brahma Samhita. The rest of them there for him. Right? So in other words, he'll take the essence of that and then put it into his books. And then Brahma Samhita, you can take from there. But it's still from the understanding we have from Prabhupada's books, we can appreciate that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he mentioned two books. The Jiva Dharma and the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. So that's there. So Brahma Samhita, that. Then the Vriyad Bhagavatamrita, the Sandarbhas. Right? So these have been mentioned by him. And so that's where the deep, but you still have to see it in relationship to how Prabhupada's presented it. Then it becomes complete, because we're only going to be serving the previous acharyas through our acharya. We're not going to be serving them without our acharya. That's why they're interested in accepting our service, is because of our connection with the acharya. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like you have the grandchild. Why is the grandparent interested in dealing with the grandchild? Right? Because the connection. You're this. They're the child of the child. Right? But I mean, everybody's having kids, you know, and so the second, you know, the equivalent generation down in grandchildren were not necessarily particularly interested. Right? Does that make sense? So it's because it's specific in the line. So it's because we are following Srila Prabhupada. That's why Rupa and Sanatana and the others, then they're interested to accept our service. But we think, no, I'm going to deal with them directly. It's like, why would they want to deal with us? Because if the grandson deals with the grandfather directly without the father, then what does that make him? He's not the grandson anymore. He's the son. And if he's the son, then, you know, get out there, get a job, and make some money. If he's a grandson, yeah, come sit, let's have some fun. You know, so it's like, you know, what's the what's the point? Is that, yeah. Yeah, so that's what Bhagavatam brings out, is this personal aspect, which the Vedanta, the Upanishads, like that, they only allude to. They mention it, but it's not actually brought out. Because it's presenting through logic. It's called Nyaya Prastha. And this Nyaya is based on the Shruti, on the Upanishads. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.16. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements, knowledge and ignorance. Your multi-energies are continually manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, which is undivided, original, changeless, unlimited, and blissful, is the cause of the material manifestation. Because you are the same impersonal Brahman, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Right? So he is the Brahman, because it's not different from him, but at the same time he's different. So it's a feature of Krishna. But the point is, the original feature is the personal feature. It means him as Bhagavan. These others are just aspects that come from him. Right? Something like that. Yeah. And so then, yeah, all these energies are there. They're yeah. So, let's see. Yeah. So, Sutra 1410, Shamshaya. How can Prakriti be called unborn and at the same time arise from Brahman? This doubt is answered in the next sutra, right? Because we've talked about it as both. Mm-hmm. So that's doubts will come up because of the multiplicity of how we use the words. Mm-hmm. That's the difficulty. If you just say something is this, then it makes it very easy. Mm-hmm. But if there's so many things, then it makes it difficult. Right? Yeah. Kalpano pade sach cha madvad hivad avirodhaha. Kalpana, creation, upadeshat, from the instruction, cha, certainly, madhav, honey, adhi, beginning with, adhi, beginning with, fad, like, avirodhaha, not a contradiction. Because it is said to be created by the Supreme, it is not a contradiction to say that Prakriti is both created and uncreated. In this way, it is like honey and some other things that are both created and uncreated. Right? Honey is created, but at the same time, all it is pollen, which is already existing.
So that's right? The transformation.
Sorry?
That's, you call it transformation?
Yeah. Like that. So because the energy is there, but because the transformation, we say this is new. So in that way we say it's created, but at the yes. same time it's not created because the energy is always there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? But at the same time is you can't say the honey is pollen. Right, because you can't take the honey and pour it on a flower and get get fruit. Yes.
So when you talk about the principles are always there.
Yes.
And when we talk about entities in specific, then they are manifest and unmanifest.
Entities
means like even pradhan, it comes out and then it goes in, but in principle it always exists.
It's always there. It's just a matter of whether it's what was that word you used?
Prakash manifested.
Prakash manifested, but it's always there. Just like Krishna says in the Gita, he opens with that there has not been any time when the souls and Krishna did not exist, but when Prakash happens, then that's the time when we become conscious of all the different things that are there. But otherwise, we've always existed. So the Vaikuntha planets that are unlimitedly expanding by the Kriya Shakti. But the point is they've always existed, but now they're manifest. So that's where the difficulty comes in, is because we say, it appeared here, so it's, but that's the thing. It's just like, okay, this flower is here, so therefore this table must have created it. So that's the difficulty, is that, or the space created it. Somehow or another, if you have the proper proportion, proper height off the ground, proper proportion and the width and length, and that proper proportion to this front part of the desk, and you have the proper color and all that, then flowers will manifest. Because you've never seen the flowers here, right? They've always been here. Not happy. Yeah, seriously not happy. Yes, so that's the thing. It's not a contradiction, because it's created by the Lord, means everything is the Lord, coming from the Lord. So his creation is still, everything's eternal. The principles on which it's based. But at the same time as the particular manifestation of it, that transformation, that may, move on. But the principle of it, how it works, and that energy is still there. And that the potential of any of that being manifest is still there. So that's the point. It's because you say it's created by the Supreme, then if you're looking at it from there, then you understand it's eternal. At the same time, it's manifest. Does that make sense? If we're looking from our position, we look more as the beginning and end of things. But from Krishna's point, from that point, no, it's everything's eternal. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaurabhinoda.
When I made the desk, I didn't mean to include a flower manifesting potency.
Well, but still, you got the proportion right. It just, it's all happening. You'll take the credit anyway. Yeah, it looks nice.
Do you need any servicing?
No, it seems to be okay. Yeah, nothing's fallen off or anything, has it? It's okay?
Okay.
Just the flowers manifest.
In the same place.
Yeah, always on that side. Sometimes that corner. They don't manifest in the middle. Somehow or another, it must be the the particular thing or the particular corner or something like that.
That leg drawing Shakti from the earth.
Yes, yeah, because flowers are the... Yeah, that makes sense.